I'm Richard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 173, for the weekend starting 8 April 2017.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, the home of South Africa's best technology journalism.
On Talk Central this week, how Samsung and South Africa dealt with the Note 7 crisis.
Also this week, Facebook now has 170 million users in Africa, Vodafone's CEO is in town, and LG's new G6.
Time to turn fire up on the Skypes for another show.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Rechert?
How's it, Duncan?
Good. We're trying something new today. You are sitting at home. I'm sitting at home. It's a Saturday morning, and we're doing this over Skype.
Yeah, isn't fiber a wonderful thing? I mean, by all accounts, the video and audio feeds are sounding quite good.
Indeed. We're running HD video to each other here. I see you having a morning cup of coffee over there.
Yeah, at least I can have my homebrew coffee, which is great.
Not as good as mine.
Well, we'll have to compare notes.
We will indeed. But this is a... interesting experiment we're doing, put it that way. It's a Saturday morning. We didn't get to do the podcast yesterday. We normally record on a Friday afternoon, but there was so much else going on in South Africa yesterday that we didn't really get a chance to do it. But here we go. We're going to try our first ever Skype call. We're both on Vumatel fiber. We're both on symmetrical Vumatel fiber. So in theory, this podcast quality should be excellent today.
Should be good. Yeah, I'm quite keen to experiment with other softwares too. I think if we set up some peer-to-peer something, I think we could get some really good quality too. So, we'll keep experimenting.
Mm. I can hear you're not in the room with me. I mean, your voice is a little digitized. I'm guessing my voice sounds to you a little digitized, even though we're probably only 5 kilometers from each other and talking over fiber connections. And presumably this call is being routed locally, although I don't know the answer to that. Might be going overseas and coming back here.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be much lag on the line though, so I think it may be rooted locally.
I think it's just a little bit of the software compression that I can hear. But fiber is such a fantastic technology. There must be a way for us to get super clear studio quality like we do when we're recording in studio.
Yeah. We were talking before the show started about ways of doing this, and what we could have done is we record the show onto an audio recording product called a Zoom H6. You have a Zoom product there as well, Rechert,
and what
we could have done is you could have recorded the audio directly onto your Zoom, uploaded it into the cloud for me, and then we could have put it together and stitched it together in Audition, and it would have sounded like we were in the same room together. But we thought, for authenticity's sake, we will record this directly using Skype onto a Zoom. So what you're hearing from Rechert, I'm recording on my side, so Rechert's voice won't be quite as crystal clear as mine. But so far, I'm quite impressed with this, and it's a nice way of doing things. And of course, we're often traveling, and it's a great way to record a podcast if we happen to be at an event or something. If I or yourself go off to an event, say Mobile World Congress,
definitely.
As long as we have broadband between both endpoints, we can have a great conversation.
Yeah, I'm sure you can do this on a good LTE connection as well. So. Looking forward to that.
Yeah, just make sure it's not an international roaming LTE connection. Otherwise, it could get a bit pricey. But this is pretty good. So the reason we're recording on a Saturday and from home from our respective homes is that there was a lot of stuff going on in South Africa yesterday. And Rechard, you actually went off to Pretoria. I was hoping to get there as well, but time pressures precluded me, unfortunately, from getting there. You went through to the protest march to the union buildings. How was it?
Yeah, I mean, it was an electrifying atmosphere. You know, just driving from our home through the suburbs onto the highway, I kind of got hints of like a World Cup-esque vibe. You know, there was a lot of people singing and chanting, everybody seemingly coming together for this common cause. Like I said, it was a great atmosphere. A lot of people obviously there to voice their opinion and their unhappiness with what's happening in government at the moment. And which is great to see everybody together. I mean, it was a sight to behold. Obviously, as a photographer, I went specifically to take some photographs, which I did, and some video clips. There was some good stuff that I got. So I'm actually going through that this afternoon, and I'll be sharing that online. But yeah, it was great to be part of that. There's another one coming up on the 12th, I believe, a more official one run by political parties. So I think we're getting momentum in there's certainly momentum in this movement against the corrupt government.
I suppose there was a concern that this would be a once-off and then it would just peter out. But you're right, there's more protests planned for next week. I think that Save South Africa movement has got a permanent fixture in Church Square in Pretoria. So it does sound like that this thing has momentum and is going to carry on. You went through to Pretoria with the hope of putting a drone up in the air, but there were a lot of helicopters around, you say, so it wasn't really safe to do so.
Yeah, and the thing with drones, you can't fly over people. There were a lot of people there. I was hoping to go to the far right of the Union buildings, but that's a national key point too. So, I was hoping that there'd been opportunity, but I didn't want to chance it.
You didn't want your drone shot down, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I also didn't want to be arrested. And
that's true.
I mean, you can't, I don't want to be bragging about footage if I can't shoot it legitimately. You can't really share it. I saw some social media post of people, I think, in Durban. There was a Durban or Cape Town drone. Somebody flew a drone over the crowds.
Yeah, that's
not
great.
Not really the way to do it. I mean, you'll get great shots, but you can't chance it. I mean, the law at the moment says you can't fly over people.
Oh, does it? Okay.
No, I do fly over people when it's a group that I know and that I've arranged. It's a proper shoot that I've done, then it's fine. But yeah, you never know. Somebody throws a rock at the thing, it falls out of the sky. It could get messy.
It could get messy, yeah. On the other hand, it's a drone. It's not a helicopter gunship. But someone by the name of Anthony George Kirkwood took some very good footage, actually, of the Durban beachfront area where the Durban march took place. Thousands and thousands of people on the Marine Parade. If you go to Facebook and just search Anthony George Kirkwood, you'll be able to find his video just showing the scale of the march in Durban. It looked pretty impressive. And the drone footage he took is quite amazing as well. I think I might embed it in the post on this podcast just so that you have direct access to it without having to go to Facebook. But really, really, really great footage. But you say, he was flying over the crowd. I wasn't aware that was actually not permitted under the regulations here in South Africa.
Yeah, look, there's a lot you can get away with when you fly a drone, and I try and push the boundaries every now and then, but it just wasn't the right place and time to do it.
But with helicopters flying around and floating a drone over the Union buildings might not have been the best idea.
Yeah, exactly. There were a lot of guys in riot gear. I didn't want to be the focus of one of them.
Yes, indeed.
And also, there were some VIP presence, because I did see some men in black type security.
Oh, I'm sure they were there,
So I also didn't want to, I didn't want to chance it. But I had a lot of fun. The only other thing I wish I had was my 360 camera. Because I was walking, it was I had too much to carry. I wanted to focus on video and audio. So, getting back to what this was, what an amazing experience to be part of. And I urge anybody to if they have an opinion to voice, that's definitely the place to do it and feel part of this movement.
Yeah, great to see South Africans rising up and having a voice on what they see as an injustice. So great stuff. Marches all over the country this week, and some great pictures as well. Not just drone footage, but I've seen some great images being shared on social media. Now, I thought South Africans were also very creative with the placards that they put up.
Oh yeah, there is great ones.
Some of them
took some photos, some really good ones. Yeah,
some of them were a bit rude, but some of them were very clever as well. I think South Africans really put their thinking caps on for those placards before they went out and marched this week.
Yeah. A lot of shower head style banner flags people were walking around. It was quite fun.
Indeed. Anyway, we're not going to have a big rant like we did on last week's show on politics. We've got lots of tech to talk about, so let's get right into it. I do want to, before we start talking about the specific news for this week, I do want to talk about some of the other podcasts that we're doing. If you are not aware, we have two podcasts on Tech Central. There's this one, Talk Central, and of course we've launched a new podcast series simply called Tech Central, or the Tech Central Podcast, where we are interviewing technology leaders and other very interesting people in the technology space and broader, in fact. And we've got some really, really interesting interviews lined up in the coming weeks. I don't want to give away anything just yet in case we jinx it, but we have
some good ones.
We've got some really good interviews coming up. But this week we had some good interviews too. Teto Nyati, newly appointed CEO of Ultron. Of course, he was the former CEO of MTN South Africa until quite recently. Very interesting interview with him. Worth listening to. on its own just for the section where he talks about radical economic transformation. He has some very strong views on it. He warns that it's rhetoric and that some of the things that are being proposed could damage our economy. So Mteto Nyati speaking out, like so many South Africans this week, some interesting views. The Mteto Nyati podcast is well worth going to have a listen to. I also had a chance to chat to Craig Fleischer, who is head of mobile at Samsung in Southern Africa. I spoke to Craig. He's just back from New York for the launch of the Galaxy S8 smartphone, Samsung's new flagship smartphone. Very interesting discussion. I'm going to get into a bit of that, what he told us during the course of this podcast. I won't say any more on that at the moment, but well worth a listen as well. And then I also had a chat with Greg Sorrell, who is vice president at an American company called HID Global. He's based in Silicon Valley. Had a really interesting chat to him this week as part of a series of podcasts we're doing on information security. And we specifically looked at biometric security, different types of biometric security, like iris scanning and fingerprint, etc. Nice. And he spoke in some detail about what the crooks are doing to try and break it and how the industry is trying to stay ahead. So if you're interested in cybersecurity, and particularly if you're interested in biometrics and whether they're safe or not, the podcast with Greg Sorrell is worth a listen to as well. So lots of news to talk about too. So let's jump straight.
And a quiz, actually.
A quiz. Thank you. I always forget about the quiz, Rafat. What did I do without you?
I've been trying to highlight it in Google Docs for you so you could see.
I was wondering what you were doing. The show notes are going pink and they highlight in pink and they've been flashing in front of me. I thought, Rafat, what are you doing? I'm a bit slow this morning. It is a Saturday after all. All right. Do you want to start with the first question?
Yeah, sure. First question in this week's quiz. LG this week launched its new G6 flagship smartphone in South Africa. How much does it cost? We are looking for a recommended retail price within the range of R1,000.
Amazon.com CEO Jeff Bezos this week said he spends how much of his own money every year funding Blue Origin, his space exploration company?
The third question. Samsung Electronics said this week in an interview with Tech Central that it pushed out the launch in South Africa of Samsung Pay, its tap-and-go payment and digital wallet solution, to when?
And our fourth question, which politician this week tweeted that the demonstrations by South Africans against President Jacob Zuma were, quote, rubbish, then deleted the tweet, and then claimed that the tweet was fake?
You can't hide from those screenshots, eh?
You can't.
Fifth question. Vodacom's chairman announced this week he was stepping down. Who is he? And for a bonus point, why is he stepping down?
That's our quiz. Thanks for pointing it out, Rafat. We will get to the answers to that at the end of the show. But now it is officially time for us to talk about the news. And I want to talk a bit about that interview I had with Craig Fleischer yesterday. We've podcasted on the website, as I mentioned earlier. Very interesting discussion, not only about the Galaxy S8, and I won't talk much about that because Craig goes into a lot of detail on that, and we have spoken about it in our last podcast. But I was chatting to Craig about the Galaxy Note 7, the infamous Galaxy Note 7 that caught fire and caused forced Samsung into a global recall, costing it an estimated $6 billion. Now, I asked Craig what the impact was of the Note 7 recall in South Africa. I think it's been generally thought that it didn't really have an impact here because the device never went on sale.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, it had a huge impact on the South African market. They were 48 hours away from launching it commercially in retail. So the phones were in stores. They'd been distributed. There were still some in the warehouse, but a lot of them had been distributed to retail outlets. Craig said that even though the stores had signed agreements saying they wouldn't sell the Note 7 before the launch date, some of them had already been sold through retail, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some of the store owners themselves had checked them out. So they had quite a complex process of recalling these things from customers who bought them before the official launch date. Mm. Recalling it from stores, obviously the ones in the warehouse were easier to recall.
Yeah.
But they booked advertising space, they bought brochure space, so they couldn't cancel that at the last minute. So national newspaper ads had to be taken out, so they had to change those ads at the last minute from Note 7 to advertising the Galaxy S7, which was their other top-end device at the time. So it was a bit of a logistical symphony, as Craig put it. What was interesting as well, I thought, and I don't think it's been disclosed before, is that the Note 7s that were recalled were not shipped back to Korea. they were handed over to a specialist third party here in South Africa, and they were all destroyed.
Oh, wow. Destroyed, not even dismantled and...
Destroyed. Apparently in an environmentally friendly way. Apparently there were Greenpeace rules that were abided by, etc. But the phones were the phones were destroyed. Locally.
That's a massive write-off. I thought they would reuse some of that stuff. But,
No, they destroyed them, which I was amazed to hear. I really thought they would have sent them back to Korea and maybe refurbished them or taken parts out or something. They destroyed them.
But I'm sure there must be a few floating around still. People obviously not wanting to give them back, you know, keep them for a few years, sell them for a few thousand, you know.
Yeah. The problem is they're bricks now. I mean, the moment they connect to the internet, they get bricked by Samsung. You can't use them anymore. They won't charge. So they're paperweights. But apparently there are still devices out there. About 1 million worldwide have still not been returned to Samsung.
That's a massive number.
It is. It's an amazing number. So, you know, you're probably talking at least several hundred, probably several thousand on the ground here in South Africa still. But 1 million worldwide. And I guess people are figuring that these things are going to become museum pieces. Maybe at some point in the future it will be safe to switch them on again because the bricking will have... process will have ended and maybe you can use them.
Well, I'm sure it's an Android device, right? So I'm sure if you're a hacker type, you'll be able to bypass before it gets bricked.
Yeah, indeed. Even after it gets bricked, there's probably ways of doing it.
But that's a massive number. I thought it was only a few thousand that would have been outstanding because of the limited launch around the world.
They'd gone on sale in North America and Korea and I think some other markets around the world already. So some markets in Europe, if I recall correctly. And there were literally within hours of going on sale here in South Africa. There were a lot of them. There were millions. I think there were five. I stand to correction, but I think there were 5 million out in the market already. And 1 million apparently still out there. And Samsung is probably never going to get them back. The other interesting thing that Craig Fleischer said during this podcast interview this week, that Samsung Pay, the tap and go payments solution, and obviously competitor to Apple Pay, was meant to be launched in South Africa in Q1. That didn't happen. It's been a little bit more complex than they expected in terms of the regulatory environment and the need to get all these POS terminals compliant and working with Samsung Pay. Apparently it's been a bit more difficult than they expected, but they have now set a Q3 launch date and they hope to launch it with the next Note device. Craig Fleischer also confirming that there will be another Note. So Note 8, I presume, will be out in the third quarter of this year, and he said that the intention is to launch Samsung Pay tap and go payments and have at least 60-65% of all POS terminals in South Africa supported by that time. So ambitious goal, but they did miss their Q1 deadline, which was clearly too ambitious. So Q3, I'm looking forward to trying out. I'm with FNB and their Tap and Pay works quite well, but there's a sort of limited rollout at the moment. You can only use it at certain retailers. I've tried it at Engine Garages. It seems to be work pretty uniformly at Engine Garages. But Samsung is promising that Samsung Pay will be available fairly universally in South Africa, at least 60% of point-of-sale terminals when they launch in the third quarter, which I think is the right approach because you don't want to launch without critical mass because consumers won't take it up.
Well, the question is it going to support any other standards like Apple Pay perhaps, or is this going to just be for the Samsung platform?
I don't know the answer to that question. I presume that that this is integration for Samsung only, but I presume that the integration work that Samsung's doing will grease the wheels for other phone makers coming into this market. I've got no idea. Apple is notoriously quiet. That's not the right word. They're notoriously They don't reveal what they're doing. So who knows? Apple might be working with the local banks. They might not be. We probably won't know until they launch or shortly before they launch. Samsung is much more open in terms of what they're doing. So they're promising Q3 now. Who knows? Apple might launch shortly thereafter. Perhaps what Samsung is doing is going to make it easier for Apple because because Samsung has done the legwork, talking to the regulators, talking to the banks, so that everyone in the ecosystem understands what needs to be done to make it work. So interesting podcast with Craig Fleischer. Go have a listen to that. It's available on the Tech Central website, or just grab it through your favorite podcatcher. What else is happening this week? Vodafone, their big boss, global CEO, Vittorio Colao, is in town. He's been here. He was here the whole week, I believe. I had an interview with him at Vodacom's head office in Midrand. Of course, Vodafone owns 65%. Vodafone owns 65% of Vodacom, and Vittorio looks after Vodafone's global operations. They've got operations in 24 markets around the world, including markets in Europe, the UK, Spain, Portugal, Germany, Italy, a range of other markets. They're a player in India. I think they sold their stake in Verizon in the US, although I think they've launched an MVNO there, if I remember correctly. And of course, they own Safaricom, or they own a stake in Safaricom in East Africa. They own operations in Ghana, and they've got a stake in an Egyptian operator. They might own the Egyptian operator entirely. And of course, here in Southern Africa, they own Vodacom, which has operations in South Africa, Tanzania, the DRC, Lesotho. I know I'm missing some, but interesting interview I had with him this week, and we'll be publishing that story in full on Sunday, tomorrow, on Tech Central. We'll also be publishing that story in the Sunday Times this weekend. Interesting conversation with him. I chatted to him about the white paper, the ICT policy white paper, and he had some interesting views on that, and he's quite positive that a breakthrough is imminent with government on the wholesale open access network and the allocation of spectrum. He believes that the hybrid model is the model that's going to be that's going to win favor for everybody. He's confident that government is warming to that idea. We've spoken in detail about this before on this podcast, so I'm not going to rehash it all now, but that story out tomorrow, and he's expressing some interesting views. He also expressed some interesting views on the downgrade of South Africa's credit rating to junk this week, at first by S&P Global Ratings and then later in the week by Fitch. He talked about the impact that would have on Vodafone's investment here in South Africa. I don't want to give away too much yet. And we also had a discussion on the future of mobile, discussion about dumb pipes and whether he believes mobile operators should be involved in buying content or developing content or buying content or distributing content.
That's cool. Yeah.
He had some very interesting views on that. I won't be running that story tomorrow, but look out for that one early next week. He had some really interesting interviews on that. In short, he said that mobile operators should not be producing content because it's not their area of expertise. But he did believe they need to be big players in the space as distributors of content.
I like that.
But more on that a bit later in the week. We need to take an ad break, Rachat. We'll be back right after this.
Honey, why can't I download any more series?
Dad, my game just bombed.
Daddy, I was speaking to Kevin and my call just cut out.
With uncapped Vox fiber to the home, reaching your cap is a thing of the past. You can have all your devices connected all the time. Get unlimited browsing, unlimited calling, and unlimited entertainment. Vox fiber, now uncapped. T's and C's apply. For more information, visit vox.co.za.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Rachat?
How's it, Duncan?
We are talking over Skype, and so far so good. I'm quite impressed with the quality of the call.
Yeah, definitely. I think if we just put some lighting on ourselves, we can even record it.
On video and dump it on YouTube. Yeah, not that anyone really wants to see us. We might break the internet.
we'll just do skins on our VR overlay on our faces. That'll be fine.
Indeed, some Snapchat overlays. we don't want to violate YouTube's terms of service, but we will try video at some point.
Definitely.
I'm sure there's some
exciting times.
Yeah, indeed, absolutely. I'm sure there are some masochists out there that would like to see us on video. So I'm playing with the new phone from LG. They launched it in South Africa this week. The LG G6. It's the new flagship, which they announced at Mobile World Congress in Barcelona. About 6 weeks ago now, I think. Yep. A very impressive device, I must say. I must just qualify this. I haven't played with the new Samsung yet. I've just had it in my hand for a second. I haven't had a chance to use it properly, so I can't compare it to the S8. But this is a very good phone. It's not round. It doesn't have a round screen, which seems to be the flavor of the month at the moment. Mm-hmm. It's flat. They made very clear during the press conference in Johannesburg this week that they believe consumers don't want rounded screens. They also had a few digs at their competitor, saying that they've done rigorous testing with this phone and it's not going to catch fire. I've always been a fan of LG. I've always found the.
You've owned a few of them.
I have. I actually own the LG G2 and the G3. I didn't get the G4. I forget which phone I got that year, but I bought the G3, which was a lovely phone. I was a big fan of that device. I used it for a full year. The G5, I think they lost track of it. They were experimenting. They went for a modular design where you could unplug different accessories, but like Motorola did with the Moto Z, although I think the implementation wasn't probably not as good as the Moto Z's implementation of modularity. It didn't work for them. The sales for the G5 tanked, and so they've ditched that idea and they've gone back to the they've gone back to a phone that doesn't offer those sort of add-ons. If I bought the G5, I'd probably be a bit disappointed that I'd spent all that money, especially if I bought the add-ons. Only to find out that the next version doesn't support them. Motorola has said that they will support I forget what they call them, the add-ons, Moto Mods, for at least two generations of phones. If you buy the Moto Z now or Moto Z now, you'll find the next version supports those Moto Mods. That's what they've promised anyway.
Oh, cool.
If you'd spent a lot of money on the accessories for the add-ons for the G5, I think you legitimately might feel a bit aggrieved that the G6 has abandoned that idea. But you can't blame LG, and the sales of the G5 were really, really quite poor by all accounts. But the G6 goes back to the sort of design stylings that we've seen with earlier LGs. It's a beautiful phone, metal phone, flat front-facing, front 5.7-inch LCD display. It's not OLED, so probably not as bright as clear in the sunlight as some of the new phones like the S8, but still a beautiful screen. And the trend we're seeing is towards much smaller bezels on these devices, and that's certainly the case with the LG G6. It is almost all screen. It's not edge-to-edge screen like on the S8, but it very nearly is. And it's an impressive device. It's a pity we're doing this over Skype, but I don't know. I'm holding it up to my camera here. Rechot, you probably can't really get a good impression of it. But
I'm looking at some photos online. I mean, that bezel looks very nice. It looks like a really smart, clean design.
It's a beautiful design. Rounded corners. It's LG, I found, has always done really good hardware. They've probably lacked a bit in the software department. I found the software to be a little bit amateurish, perhaps compared to the iPhone, and probably also compared to the Android overlays on things like the Xperia devices from Sony, and also the Samsung TouchWiz interface, dare I say it, which I must say has improved dramatically with the S8. TouchWiz on the S8 looks really impressive, but the I must say on the LG G6 they've clearly done a lot of work with the Android interface. It's running Android 7.0. There's not as much overlay. It's more of a, as we've seen with other Android phone manufacturers, they've gone for a more pure Android experience. There's still the LG touches here and there. The screen, for example, stretches when you pull it off to one side, which I'm not sure is my favorite effect, but it's something that
you can't disable that.
I'm sure you can somewhere in the settings. I haven't actually checked. You can certainly change a lot of the effects, like the unlock effect and the fade effect as you move between home screens. But they've clearly done a lot of work on the design. The little clock and weather widget is one of the best I've seen on an Android phone. It's a nice clean interface, and it works well with the rounded edges of the phone as well. Really nice. My only criticism is they've done away with the app tray. I like the app tray on Android. The S8 has done away with the app tray as well, so it does seem to be the trend amongst these Android manufacturers to do that. But it's relatively trivial to re-enable the app tray. Just Google re-enable LG G6 app tray, and there'll be lots of how-to articles out there. So it's no train smash. You can get it back by downloading a little piece of software from the LG App Store.
And I see it's got dual cameras at the back. What do you use them for? How do you use them?
I have no idea. I haven't even really used the camera on this yet. I presume it's the same reason they have dual cameras on other devices. Probably allows you to focus after taking the photo, I'm guessing, although I'm not sure. Haven't actually sat down and done a proper review of this phone. We'll do that in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, you're right, dual cameras on the back. The selfie camera on this is very impressive. I think it's 8 megapixel, could be higher even. But the cameras of the pictures I've taken so far, and I haven't stress tested it yet, I haven't taken cameras photos at night. But the hardware in this device certainly does look good. It's got a Snapdragon 821 processor, so not the very latest, but still quite recent. And the performance is pretty good, 4 gigabytes of RAM, Android 7, as I mentioned. Hopefully the updates come quite soon, because LG has been quite poor in the past at updating the Android versions on its devices. But it's a beautiful phone. It's well designed, and if you're a fan of LG, this is a good upgrade. That's our news. Let's move on to our regular features. Winner and loser of the week. Let's start with our loser, because it was part of our quiz this week. And that is the tweet that was put out by our presidential hopeful, Jacob Zuma's ex-wife, and of course, Zana Dlamini Zuma, who this week put out a tweet, in effect, rubbishing South Africans for marching against her ex-husband. Calling for him to step down. She described the protests against the president as rubbish. I don't have the tweet in front of me at the moment, but you can find it quite easily online if you Google it. In effect, she was highly critical of the tweets. She was then criticized heavily on Twitter with people suggesting that this shows her true colors. And is she really suitable to be our next president? Interestingly, within the hour, the tweet was deleted. And further tweet was issued claiming that the original tweet that people were sharing had taken a screenshot of course, and was being shared all over Twitter was fake, suggesting that she'd never sent it in the first place.
She probably got hacked too.
It's possible. It's possible. I don't think so.
No, I was being sarcastic. Okay. That's usually the go-to excuse.
It's possible that she wasn't tweeting it, that it was one of her handlers. You know, someone at her level probably has someone managing her account for her, and it's possible that whoever is managing that account tweeted it either by mistake through her account instead of their own personal account, or wasn't thinking. So it's possible that it was a handler, but it's entirely possible as well that it was Dlamini Zuma herself who sent it out. But it was an interesting one anyway. You know, if she did send it herself, I think it provides some interesting insight into her thinking.
Also, if it's anybody close to her, I guess, you know, it would be the sentiment of the group or of the sentiment of the organizer. Her and her handlers, right? Mm. I mean, isn't that how you generally do it?
I guess, yeah. And if you send out a tweet and it's a mistake, right? That's fine. Delete it. Oops, we made a mistake. One of my handlers made a mistake. This tweet shouldn't have been sent out.
Exactly.
But then don't say that the original tweet was made up, was fake.
That's where it gets a little bit fishy.
I mean, it's so easily proven that it wasn't fake and that it was actually issued by that verified Twitter account. Her account has a blue tick next to it. It's verified. Yeah. It's her account. So she can't claim that it's someone else's account.
Yeah, exactly.
She's our loser of the week for that. It was very tempting to pick Jacob Zuma again, but this is a tech show, so I suppose we need to find some sort of tech angle on it. There is a link to this week's protests. So that's our loser this week. And of course, Zana Dlamini Zuma for more so for saying that the tweet was fake rather than actually sharing the tweet in the first place. And our winner this week is another South African, although I don't know if he'd call himself that anymore. That's Tesla founder Elon Musk. Tesla, which of course now makes the batteries as well, so it's not just a car company, is now worth more than Ford.
Wow.
Even
that's
though
impressive.
Ford is many times bigger. It is now the second most valuable car manufacturer in the United States after General Motors. not bad for a little electric car startup that has probably only sold a few 10,000 cars.
Yeah. Oh, can't wait for those to come to South Africa. I've seen some videos on YouTube. Those vehicles are impressive.
The Tesla Model 3. Yeah, let's hope it gets here. I think quite a few South Africans have put pre-orders in for those. I'm sure those people who have put in pre-orders are watching the downgrades and the rand weakening by the day and watching the price of their Tesla going up and up and up. But yeah, I must say, I'd love to own one of those as well. The Tesla Model 3 looks beautiful. But that's our winner this week. Elon Musk is Tesla is now worth more than Ford. That's an incredible accomplishment.
Very impressive, yeah.
Richard, what's your pick this week?
You know, I like beer. You know, I like
I know gadgets. You love beer.
So you also okay. So you when you go running, you also track your run and your heart rate and all of those things.
I do. I use a Garmin 630, Forerunner 630. It's a fantastic device.
So then this my pick will also work for you if you're interested. It's called Beer Tracker Plus, and it's a little plug-in or add-on that you can add into your onto your Garmin watch. There's a couple of watches like the Fenix 3, your watch, the Forerunner 35. I think those kind of watches are supported. And essentially, once you've installed this, your workout essentially gets converted into a reward system that will, at the end of your workout, tells you how many beers you've earned, which is a nice little incentive if you're a little bit of an active person but also enjoy icy cold beverage. This application will tell you what you've earned, after your workout.
Doesn't it kind of defeat the purpose?
No, well, I mean, I think
asking for a friend.
It allows you to keep the balance.
I suppose.
Some of us will never give up beer, Duncan, no matter how hard we are. it's a very cool little application.
You know what they say, a well-balanced diet is a beer in one hand and another beer in the other hand.
Yeah, exactly. This is an application for Connect IQ. So if you're a Garmin user, you know that you use Connect IQ to upload data and plugins to your device. We'll put a link in the show notes, but it's available on the Garmin.com website. That's IQ Beer Tracker Plus.
I've noticed that you've said on our show notes here, just beer. It's a bit early in the morning, isn't it?
I think the podcast is finishing soon, another hour, then I can hit one.
All right. It is the weekend after all.
It is.
My pick this week is something called Physics Toolbox Suite. It's available for iOS and for Android. It's a very cool little app. As our phones get more and more powerful, they've got all sorts of interesting sensors built into them, sensors that we don't even realize that are in our phones. And this little app takes advantage of every single sensor in your phone and shows you in a beautiful graph format the output from those sensors. For example, I've just fired up on this LG G6, a barometric pressure sensor, and it's showing me pressure over time, and it actually shows you amazing. The sensitivity of this thing is absolutely astonishing. You can actually see the pressure declining or rising in real time, atmospheric pressure.
Wow.
It appears to be, so this actually amazes me because I didn't realize you could actually get this level of sensitivity. But if I actually raise the device above my head, I see the atmospheric pressure falling as it goes higher. And if I lower the phone towards the ground, it shows the atmospheric pressure rising. And as you know, atmospheric pressure is higher at the coast than it is in the mountains. I'm still a bit skeptical about whether moving a device a meter actually affects its atmospheric pressure around it. But according to this device, it does.
I think the size of these sensors, of many of these sensors, have shrunk so much. I mean, it's a little diode on the device that will measure this barometric pressure.
Yeah.
Does it maybe not pull it from the internet?
No,
this is GPS location or anything. This is
definitely
using the sensors.
This is using the sensors according to the app. It's currently measuring barometric pressure of 859.61 hectopascals, and it's jumping around 66.61, 0.63, 0.62, 0.63, 859.61 hectopascals. As far as I can tell, it's using the built-in barometer in this device. Now, they've got a G-force meter, a linear accelerometer, gyroscope barometer, function called roller coaster, proximeter, there's a ruler, a magnetometer, compass, digital compass, of course, GPS, inclinometer, light meter, sound meter, tone detector, oscilloscope, multi-recorder, I'm not sure what that does, tone generator, color generator and something called a stroboscope, which is in beta. So lots of really geeky stuff in here if you want to play around. If you've got a modern handset like a G6, like a Samsung S7 or S8, or if you have an iPhone, install the app and you can see all sorts of really geeky stuff.
That is very cool.
So that is my pick this week. It's the physics toolbox suite. It's available for Android and iOS. There are a number of apps like this available in the app stores, but this is the best implementation I've seen so far because it gives you a rolling real-time graph of all of these sensors showing you what they're doing.
Very cool. I'm going to install that right away.
Cool stuff. And I think, Rehaut, that's our show, unless you've got anything else.
No, I think that is it.
Great. Our first ever Skype podcast, and I think it's gone quite well in terms of audio quality. We'll experiment in future. We'll probably mostly do these podcasts in person, but the next time we do one of these, we might indeed try and shoot a bit of video as well and put it up on YouTube, assuming that our faces don't break that YouTube license agreement.
I'll wear a hat.
Before we go, we need to do our quiz results. Let me kick off with the first question. LG this week launched its new G6 flagship smartphone in South Africa. How much does it cost? And we were looking for the recommended retail price within a range of 1,000 rand. And it's not cheap, I'm afraid. The recommended retail price is 14,629 rand.
Wow. The second question. Amazon.com CEO of Jeff Bezos said this week that he spends how much of his own money every year funding Blue Origin, his space exploration company? And the answer there is a whopping $1
billion. $1 billion of his own money every year into this venture. And he sells Amazon stock to that amount to fund Blue Origin.
Oh, wow. That's a nice little side project that you can fund, yeah.
Indeed, indeed. Samsung Electronics said this week in an interview with Tech Central that it has pushed out the launch in South Africa of Samsung Pay, its tap-and-go payments and digital wallet solution to when? And the answer, of course, is the third quarter of 2017.
The fourth question, which politician this week tweeted that the demonstrations by South Africans against President Jacob Zuma were rubbish, then deleted the tweet and then claimed that the tweet was fake? The answer, Nkosazana Dlamini Zuma.
And our last question in our quiz this week, Vodacom's chairman announced this week that he was stepping down. Who is he? And for a bonus point, why is he stepping down? And the answer is Peter Moyo, and he is taking up the role of CEO of Old Mutual Emerging Markets, and he's taking over from Ralph Mopita, who resigned to become Chief Financial Officer at MTN Group. And that is our quiz. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, please send us an email. The email address is info@techcentral.co.za. We love getting your mails, and we do read all of them. From Rehaut and myself, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.